Brought to you on the Arms Room Show with Glenn.
And Drew.
And thank you to all of our patrons for continuing to support the show and supporting all of the community service efforts that we are capable of doing in our communities and yours, thanks to your support. So if you're not a patron, please become a patron. It's our least patronage is $1 a month, and the most is $10 a month. Of course, you can always, you know, help us out with more if you want, but it's not really that much to be a part of the show. So I'd appreciate it if you would jump on that and take care of that. Certainly helps us keep the show going and all that good stuff. All righty, let's see. What do we got here? Alumni events. October the 19th, meet and greet at Dad's Eatery in Scottsdale, Arizona. That's going to be 6 to 9 p.m. From 6 to 7, we're going to be doing the run. So it's our normal Wednesday night run club for MRC Phoenix. So, you know, you're welcome to come do that with us if you want. You don't have to run. And there's going to be like a 2 mile, a 3.5 mile, and then a 4.5 mile loop that we're going to be doing. But you can come do some of it. You can walk it. You bring your dog. You can bring your kids. Bring your spouse, whatever. It's just going to be a big alumni meet and greet. And the real social part kind of runs from 7 to 9, and then the run goes from 6 to 7. So just be aware of that. November the 10th, we're going to have another event here at the schoolhouse at our office in Tempe, Arizona, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. That's going to cost you $40 because we're bringing in Bob Schneider, who's going to bring in his TI video scenario simulator to be able to run people through various different video-based self-defense scenarios, which mostly just kind of works with different decision-making and, you know, doing something and getting a response. If you haven't done the video simulators, they're pretty cool. There's another way to get some input on what your decision-making capabilities are. They have their value for sure. That's why we're bringing Bob in. He's absolutely an expert in the world of the use of lethal force for legal application and understanding what the law is and building training programs. His resume is extensive. So that's going to be November 10th from 6 to 8. You want to sign up for that on the online store at trainingaz.com. And then October the 19th, that one's free. Just come by Dad's Eatery and hang out with us. Fun things. Visa has now started using, or is going to start using, a special credit card code for merchants that sell guns. Now, gun control advocates, i.e. jackasses, are saying that this is their first step towards preventing gun violence, because essentially what they're going to do now is they're going to track gun purchases separately. They're going to have their own code. So if you're a gun dealer and you sell a gun, now it's going to show that that person with that credit card bought a gun. This is dangerous shit. This is gun control shit. This is literally gun control shit, and it's terrifying, and we should fight back against it in any way, shape, and form. So if you're a dealer, I expect you to do everything you can to not follow the laws or the rules, I mean, about that. And for the rest of us, time to start using cash, man. Mm-hmm. Let's get back to it, right? Let's get back to using cash. Let's get back to private party transactions. Yeah, fuck all this shit. This is crazy. Like, this is crazy stuff. And this is what I've been saying for years, is that when gun control happens, it's not going to be show up to the doors, give me your guns. That kind of stuff does happen from time to time. We've seen that with the ATF pulling some bullshit. But it's really this way, right? They've controlled ammunition. Now they're going to start giving guns certain codes. Next thing you know, they're going to be cruising your social media. And they're not going to approve your 4473 or maybe even your CCW if you have certain types of social media posts. And that's where they're going to do it. It's not going to be door-to-door confiscation. My favorite personal theory of mine is, now that we've got so many veterans through the VA system claiming quote-unquote disability and quote-unquote PTSD, all that needs to happen is a federal judge just needs to essentially adjudicate PTSD as a mental incompetency. And just like that, everybody who was a verified, I signed the paper that I have PTSD, recipient of government funding, i.e. welfare, is just like that, a freaking prohibited possessor. And yep. Then they can come door-to-door, confiscate your shit, and then know you got it. So it's those kinds of things that are going to get people. It's not necessarily just straight up knock, knock, give us your guns. That's not likely what's going to happen. Memphis Tennessee mayor is kind of blasting the judge the legal system, which is always comical to me, for the early release of this turd Ezekiel Kelly. He'd been released from jail early, where he'd been serving a violent crime conviction. We're seeing this more and more, especially in a lot of these, very blue cities where they are releasing people early. They're releasing them without bail. They're not properly holding violent criminals. And so this guy gets out and goes on a fucking mass shooting spree. Shoots 8 people throughout the day and evening, and 4 were dead. Memphis mayor says had a particular thing to say about it. I wanted to read it. Sorry, I just lost the damn quote. Shit. I lost it. Anyways, basically he's blaming the legal system for this process. Here he goes. If Mr. Kelly served his full 3-year sentence, he would still be in prison today, and 4 of our fellow citizens would still be alive. Once again, my friends, the legal system is not going to protect you. Cops are not going to protect you. You are going to protect you. If you're relying on the system that you don't trust, here's what's so interesting to me, and we see this all the time in our classes. We'll talk about calling 911 or, getting help there, either in a medical emergency or an armed, conflict emergency. And we talk about, okay, before we start talking about 911, guys, raise your hand if you totally trust the government. Nobody raises their hand. And then it's like, all right, but part of your main emergency plan is to call the government. And I understand that you're also trying to activate that emergency response system. And we do have to activate that system, especially when we've been involved in a crime or we need a higher level of care for medicine, et cetera, et cetera. That's all an important process. But be realistic about what's coming.
Yeah.
Be realistic about what you're going to get on the other side of that. I mean, I just watched a video the other day where a young man was and I think he might have been mentally challenged, but he stopped on the side of the road and he got stuck. And I can't even remember where this was, but I was watching the video, the camera footage of the police officers. And the whole thing seemed a little hinky. I don't know. It seems like there's a lot of details that we weren't being given in the story. But basically, they show up to help this guy, this kid, young man, he's 20 years old or something like that, and they end up shooting him to death. He's just stuck in his car. He's stuck on the side of the road. He's scared. I think he was like a little mentally handicapped or challenged or something. And anyway, at the end of the story, they fucking kill him. Like, I'm not saying this is all cops, all right? Definitely not. But be realistic about who's coming to the other end of that call, all right? People aren't charging in to save your life. This isn't a fucking Hollywood movie. In that same exact vein, madman seen smashing New York City McDonald's with an axe is released without bail. An accused jilted madman who flew into an axe-wielding rage at a Lower East Side McDonald's was released without bail at his arraignment. He allegedly grabbed an axe and trashed a Delancey Street fast food joint early Friday, was arraigned on 4th-degree criminal mischief and possession of weapons charges hours later, and then freed. Again, it's just another example. Right? These are serious problems that are within our system, right? So mainline news, of course, isn't going to be covering these types of stories. You're not going to see this in the big news. It's a tiny little story like on a sidebar somewhere that's got to be found. It doesn't fit their narrative, so of course they're not going to cover it. You are now seeing more and more attackers, such as the guy I was talking about from Memphis, that live streams their attacks. I mean, this is like a whole other level of sociopathic, maybe even, I wouldn't say psychopathic, but sociopathic behavior for sure. As William April, late and great, used to say, the world is not as it ought to be. Plan appropriately. Plan for these types of things to happen to you. If your plan is to call for help, it's not going to work out for you. All right? Pretty much guarantee it's not going to work out for you. Other gun control news, ghost gun, quote unquote, ghost gun. I'm using air quotes. You can't see them. Retailers agree to stop selling kits and parts to New York City residents as a new federal rule takes effect. This is going to be Rainier Arms and Rock Slide reached separate settlements with New York City, where officials say incidents involving ghost guns, dun, 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 have been escalating. All right. So Privacy Mike, who came in and taught our alumni-only digital privacy and security class for us, has these privacy tips to give about this particular article. He sent this article to us, and here's his tips. If you're buying legal firearm accessories from the internet, do it under an alias. It's only legally necessary to give your real name if you're buying an actual firearm. If you're buying accessories, use an alias. Privacy.com will let you create one-time use virtual debit card numbers and authorize online purchases under any name that you want. It won't make the purchase impossible to track, but it will erect hurdles when in 2 years the government decides to retroactively make you a criminal. They'll go after the low-hanging fruit. If they can track down 95% of the people who bought them and clock out for early lunch, they'll count that as a win. Meaning they're not probably going to put in that much effort. If they got to track you down, if they don't want that, right? They like Privacy Mike says there, it's the low-hanging fruit they're going after. It's the guy who's just buying stuff with his debit card, his name, his address. Come right to me and find it. That's what the ATF is doing with these four-month suppressors, literally going door-to-door on some of these people and going, hey, we saw that you bought this. We also saw that you didn't register it with the ATF, so give it to us. Fuck you. It's my property. Well, show it to us. Fuck you. You don't have a warrant. Well, why are you being difficult? Difficult? I mean, the ATF recordings are insane. They're absolutely insane with what the ATF is telling people. In one interaction, the ATF agent actually tells the guy that he's trying to get this Form 1 suppressor from that he reads too many books. What the fuck does that mean? I read too many books? I don't think you read enough book, jackboot. Maybe you're not quite fucking familiar with what your job here is or what side of the fence you're on. You're a fucking criminal yourself. Other Privacy Mike tips here. We've seen this with bump stocks, trigger kits, and now 80% lowers. They're coming after people specifically who purchased these things. We saw it with the rare breed triggers. They're literally going door to door for people who had purchased them because certain distributors have released their client lists to the ATF, and they're literally going door to door saying, okay, you have to give us back this item. That's insane. This is personal property. I paid for it. And I'm not into the whole – we joked about it, I know, a couple times on the show, oh, I lost it in a you know, boat accident or whatever. No, man, that's bullshit. It's time to start using it if you got to play that game. And people often will ask me, you know, questions like, well, what's the best guns to, you know, store for a long period of time? Bury them. How do I do that in case the government comes for them? Like, bro, if they come for them, it's time to start using them. In fact, the time at that point is probably past and you fucked up, but good luck to you. Other Privacy Mike tips here. This isn't to say you shouldn't follow all future changes in laws, but you'll be able to do so on your terms without the police kicking in your door and killing your dog for the thing you bought online 2 years ago that they've now decided is illegal. This also ties in with what I was just talking about with the Visa cards giving gun purchases their own specific code. Man, all this shit is related. They're just really starting to dial in tracking people's individual purchases and then literally showing up and asking for the products back. So, I mean, look, best case scenario is the police are going to knock on your door and harass you. It's better to be not be on the list. So use an alias, do the safe things, be legal about it, but there's nothing illegal about buying accessories and buying things that aren't federally tracked items and nobody necessarily needs to know it's you. And mostly it's just laziness that prevents us from doing that, just complacency. So we had an interesting experience recently I wanted to share with you guys. Drew and I had gone to Colorado to celebrate our anniversary, and we stayed at this really nice, beautiful resort, Pagosa Springs, the Springs Resort. If you ever have a chance, you should definitely go there. It's 25 hot springs, open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's amazing. It's an amazing place to go hang out for a few days. Badass. Pagosa Springs generally is a beautiful town. So as we were there, we were meeting a lot of people. A lot of these people were transplants. You know, they were people from Texas a lot and a little bit from California, but a lot of Texans moving to Colorado, which I guess is a problem. In Arizona, we have the Californians moving here. In Colorado, I guess, they have the Texans moving there. So whatever. But talking to both the locals about the situation and then talking to the transplants about the situation was very interesting because we talked to some people that you could tell used to be a little more left-leaning. You know, we had several conversations with different couples while we were, you know, in the Springs, just chit-chatting, whatever. And there were several couples. There's one in particular I remember that you could tell that the wife had definitely been more left-leaning in the past and was just fed up. It was really refreshing how many like-minded people we found. Pretty much every couple we talked to was like-minded. and just have the same ideas and concepts that we have about life and individual personal responsibility and individual liberty and all that. So it was really nice just to hear people. And again, especially since you could tell some of them probably haven't always leaned this way, but they're definitely getting there. Now they're just to the point where they're like, hey, man, I just want to be left alone. You know, and I'm not advocating running away from your state and, you know, abandoning the fight there. That may or may not work for you. But I am saying it's refreshing when you get to talk to people that you're like, oh man, these people are not going to think like me. And then they think like you. Like it's nice to see how many more people are out there, because so often it's – I just feel so alone, you know? I just feel like there's just so few of us that just nobody gives a shit. I don't know what it's going to take to get people to go to action. But anyways, it was an interesting observation I made that pretty much everyone we talked to was pretty like-minded. So Redwire gear moment for this week: slow is smooth and smooth is fast. But fast is also fast. The terminology often says slow is smooth and smooth is fast when people are training, trying out new gear, using new equipment. But look, fast is also fast. The concept here isn't that you need to go slow to go fast. That's fucking ridiculous. The concept is that you're trying to remove unnecessary steps. By taking things quote unquote slowly, you're removing any unnecessary steps in the process. You're identifying specifically any things that aren't needed. Removing those, going slowly, making sure you're not building bad habits, smoothing out the process, and through that efficiency, overall speeding it up. But once you find that efficiency where you just aren't having those unnecessary, unneeded movements or steps, now it's time to go fast. It's time to physically press yourself as fast as you can possibly go, whether that's running, fighting, shooting, hiking, I don't care, whatever it is. At some point in time, you need to go faster. And you got to see not how fast you can go, but how fast you can't go. Redwire Gear Moment brought to you by redwiregear.com. So our topic for this week is, how many magazines do you really need to own, and how many do you really need to carry? And I think that this is an easily answered question by just saying all of them, as many as possible. And that's always going to be what people are going to say here. But let's be realistic, okay? Because not everybody can, A, afford that or just facilitate that with space. You know, not everyone can afford to just have cases of empty, non-used magazines just hanging around at their house. If you can, fucking awesome, do that. But let's look at it from a more practical perspective. So the one point is, I get asked this question a lot. There were actually several listeners over the last, you know, I don't know, half the year or so, when we get different show ideas, who have asked me, well, you know, to do a topic sort of kind of like this. And there were two in particular who brought it up recently, especially because of what has been going on in the Ukraine. And so it was kind of more pertinent, they felt. So here's generally what we tell people. For any handgun or – well, let's start with handgun. For any handgun that you own, 5 magazines minimum. That would be – and this is to own, all right? That's 3 magazines to carry – I'm sorry, 3 magazines to practice with and 2 to carry, all right? So that way I'm carrying 2, 1 in the gun, 1 extra, and then 3 to train with. And those are the magazines I can beat up. I can get them dirty. I can drop them. They can get stepped on, right? Sooner or later, they're going to break and I'm going to have to replace them. And, you know, that's all well and good. Now, magazines last for a long time. And some magazines for different guns are going to be different prices. So, you know, having a whole bunch of magazines beyond that might be kind of expensive. If you're running CZs or H&Ks or something like that, holy shit, man. I mean, some of those magazines are, you know, 40, 50, 60 bucks a pop. So it might not necessarily be what you can afford to have a whole bunch on hand. You're running Glocks, magazines are, you know, 12 to 15, maybe 20 bucks on the high side. Yeah, have more. How many more? How often do they really break? Well, guys, I shoot a lot. I am definitely a high volume shooter, and I'm definitely beating up my equipment a lot, competitions and training and just the environments that we use our stuff in. And I probably only discard a few pistol mags a year. So I'm not really like these aren't expendable pieces of equipment to the point where you're just, oh my God, I'm going through them all the time, like socks or whatever. Like you're not going to have to go through that many extra. So in addition to that 5, then I would say the goal would be to have another five, like five that are brand new in the package untouched, so that you could, if needed, completely replace every magazine that you're currently using and you'd have it on hand. And in reality, for the average shooter, you're probably not even really going to replace magazines. I mean, I know plenty of shooters who have never had to replace a magazine. I'll use Drew as an example. Drew, you know, before she and I got together, she definitely shot, not a lot. After we've gotten together, she's definitely shot more. How many magazines in the handful of years we've been together, how many magazines on your personal guns have you had to replace?
Just that one that got stolen, or when my purse got stolen.
That was it.
Yeah.
So even with all the shooting that Drew does, and I would say she's above average volume, but not nearly as high as what I'm doing, she's never had a magazine break. And that's crossed ARs, AKs, and her pistols. So my point being is that if you're just a kind of a normal or even slightly above average shooter volume-wise, you're probably not going to see a whole lot of magazines getting replaced just from wear and tear, right? So my recommendation to everyone is five magazines for handgun. That's three to practice with and two to carry. Make sure you mark them, right? Your initials in one or two or whatever. I don't care what your fucking system is. It doesn't ultimately matter. But mark them in some way, not just to differentiate them from other people's magazines, but also to make sure you can keep track of any that are having problems. Some magazines are more prone to failures than others. You know, factory magazines will often, you know, last longer. Like my Glock factory mags, the number of those that I've replaced as compared to, let's say, the P mags that I use a lot in my Glocks, I couldn't even put a ratio to it, maybe 5 to 1, you know, 5 P mags I've had to replace for every factory mag. Now, that being said, the P mags have been insanely durable for me, insanely durable. They are my primary training mags, my primary competition mags. I do carry with actual, you know, Glock factory mags, but outside of that, like, I mean, I beat the hell out of these things and I do replace them from time to time. Recently, I had to replace 3 at once just because I had 3 that I'd noticed were kind of going bad all around the same time, probably because they'd come into service about the same time. But I mean, I probably use those magazines for a couple of years at least. And it's not that big of an expense. That's why I like the P mags. They're relatively inexpensive and they run really well. So that's for handguns. Let's just start at that base level of using it in normal circumstances. Rifle or carbine magazines. Now, this would be different based on the platform that you're using. Are we talking about a semi-automatic, you know, gas or piston operated carbine? Then yeah, you're going to want to have more magazines than if we're talking about like a bolt action rifle. You know, I have magazine fed bolt action rifles. That's a good slightly different situation. Or I've got magazine fed rimfire, you know, little, you know, semi-autos or whatever. It's kind of a different situation. For primary carbines, I would bump that number from 5 to 7. And that would be 7 primary magazines and then definitely 3 training magazines. So it's more primary magazines in this case than it is training magazines. That is a standard combat load, 210 rounds divided by 30. That's 7 magazines, right? So 7 magazines of loaded, by the way, all magazines always loaded. Unloaded magazines are fucking useless. They don't even make good doorstops or paperweights. So keep your magazines loaded. I don't care what your fucking Uncle Bob said. It doesn't wear the springs out keeping them loaded. Okay. What wears springs out is the cycling process, not the state of being compressed or uncompressed. So using the magazine is what wears it out, not using it, obviously. I don't know why anybody ever thinks that not using something will wear it out. It's sometimes shit floats around the internet. I'm like, this is the stupidest fucking thing. Like, just for a goddamn second while you're like taking a shit or something, just think, does this even make fucking sense? No, it doesn't. So 7 magazines loaded up with your spicy boys, all right? Whatever it is that you're keeping for self-defense, end of the world, whatever. And they need to be relatively accessible. So if they're, you know, that's in theory 1 in the gun and 6 in something like, I like the old school USGI bandoliers. I have got a handful of them. I think they're fucking awesome. I'm old. That's fine. I don't need everything that's fucking Molly Powell's AOR 1 TAC NSW. I don't fucking care. I just don't give a shit. I just want a thing that holds my magazines. And I like the bandoliers because I can put 6 magazines in them and you can sling that across your shoulder. You can stick it in a door. It's easy to put in a pack or whatever. And boom, I have 6 magazines just like that. So that's pretty damn handy. Plus the 1 in the gun, I have a standard U.S. Army combat load. Most people you know, like beyond that, and that's fine. But you know, do I ever think there's a time where I'm going to go through six magazines, seven magazines? Yeah, or I wouldn't fucking do it. Yeah, there is a time I think I'm going to go through that many magazines. If I'm pulling my carbine out and going to work for realsies, I want all the ammo because I don't care if I only fire five rounds. I want five rounds plus six fully loaded magazines. What I don't want is, oh, I'm just going to carry a couple mags because whatever. Yeah, no thanks. Now, it doesn't mean all your six mags have to be all right here, but in the end of a fight, I would rather have lots of loaded mags laying around than lots of unloaded mags laying around. And sure as hell, I never want to run out of ammunition. So even if all your mags aren't right here right now and you've got them kind of stashed around, like maybe there's a couple up at the, you know, a couple in your pack and then there's a couple on your belt and then there's a couple on your, you know, chest carrier or something, that's okay. You know, that's a fine way to space things out a little bit. You don't have to put them all, you know, six mags on a carrier. That's kind of ridiculous. Six mags on your belt. That's kind of ridiculous, you know, for the majority of circumstances you're going to be in. But I'm just saying, I want to have a total of relatively easily accessible seven total fully loaded magazines. Training magazines, really only need three. Because if whenever I'm on the range doing my exercises, doing my loads, doing my malfunction clearances, doing all that, just like with a pistol, you really only are going to carry a couple. You're not going to be going through them so much that you can't step back to the table and reload. So I think three is fine. Go ahead and again, mark them, all right? Now, as you are looking at going beyond this, how many magazines should you own? Well, I would say, just like with the handgun, double it with the carbine. So you have 10 magazines and another 10 magazines sealed up in the packages ready to go. My personal favorite carbine magazines for long-term, oh my God, end of the world usage are the Lancer mags. Polymer frame, metal feed lips. It's the best of both worlds. If you have a bunch of, you know, aluminum GI mags, that's fucking cool, man. If you have a bunch of P mags, also fucking cool. I don't fucking care. As long as it reliably feeds ammunition in the weapon system, I don't really care what brand it is or whatever. I'm just telling you that Lancers are the ones I've had the best luck with over the years. So bolt action rifles, you know, how many magazines do I want to keep for that? Well, if it's something like, you know, my hunting gun or something like that, then I definitely want to have at least two magazines for that. Like my hunting bolt action, I want to have at least two magazines. And that's one that's going to be in the gun, obviously, and one that's extra. Not because I think I'm going to be slinging five rounds at one poor unlucky elk, but in case I have a weapon, a malfunction related to the magazine. And that includes while I'm out hunting, the fucking magazine dropping out of the weapon. Never happened to me, but I've definitely seen it happen. I mean, I've accidentally dropped magazines, but I've never completely lost them. And definitely happened to me, man. We got on site to do some hunting. I was hunting with another guy, and we got up on an animal. He looks down in his weapon, goes to chamber around. No fucking magazine in his gun. So he's having to, you know, finger fuck single load a round in, and it wasn't ideal. Still got the job done, but it would have been easier if he could have just grabbed an extra magazine and stuck it in the gun. You know, so in from a hunting perspective, I like to keep that. From something like, you know, my cool guy badass, you know, I'm going to be shooting Overwatch or whatever bolt action sniper rifle type situation. Then I would go back to my carbine loadout and I would say that I would want a minimum of seven total magazines. And that's going to be one, you know, in the gun and then six more, handy. When you are dealing with bolt action rifles too, be aware that they generally don't. They're not as across the board adaptable, however the fucking word compatible is the word I'm looking for, with all magazines that might be made for those. So really make sure you're testing bolt action rifle magazines. I've seen more hiccups, more problems with people using various different types of magazines in their bolt action setups, certainly more so than carbines. And look, you got to do the same thing carbine, you got to do the same thing handgun, but in bolt action, I definitely see more finicky work with the magazines. Probably the weapon system out there that I see is the most finicky with magazines is pretty surprising to most people when I say this. I know Drew is, she doesn't want me to say it, but it's the AK. It's the most magazine finicky fucker because
I've never had an issue with any of my magazines.
We have several AKs, and not all of our mags work in all the AKs.
That is true, but the mags that do work in my AKs work flawlessly.
That's not the problem, though. The problem is that they're not functioning. Yeah. The problem is that there's a compatibility issue. And that's because magazines are made to slightly different specs. The guns are made to slightly different specs, you know, because they're not like always a CNC machine part here, you know, and it's being hammered out in someone's fucking tool shed or whatever. They're not always perfect. And so I've seen more problems with magazines being across the board compatible. I will say that the two magazines that I have found that work in, I think, every single one of our AKs. And they're not metal. They're going to be polymer. And that's the Magpul P-Mags and those X-Tech or X-Tech. Is it X-Tech?
Yeah, I think so.
I think it's X-Tech. The X-Tech mags and the P-Mags across the board work in every single one of our AK platforms. And so those are the ones typically when we're going to grab our AKs and go do something with them, we're taking those. And the Steely mags and all those are fun to have, but they're very finicky as far as what system they may or may not work in. So just something else to think. So anyways, there's some questions that we got from a couple different listeners, one in particular who's written some great, you know, kind of outlines for us in the past. But there's a lot of factors when you're thinking about magazine carrying, all right? So
I carry them in my pockets.
Well, let's shift for a second to context, right? When Drew's out running and gunning with us on the flat range, yeah, carry them in your fucking pockets. Like, whatever, man. It's not really that big of a deal. People are often at, well, what kind of cool special thing? I'm like, dude, just get a basic pouch you can put on your belt. My favorite are the HSGI tacos because I can put a P-Mag – an AR mag. I can put an AK mag. I can use them for my pistol mags. I'll put my fucking cell phone in there. Like, I've stuffed a lot of crazy stuff in those little single mag tacos. So that's a great just like pouch. Keep it in your range bag. It's always going to work for just about everything you're going to want to carry. And then if you need to carry more than one or two mags, okay, now start considering a battle belt, a plate carrier, chest rig, you know, something like that. And then we can go way deep in the weeds on that. But I'm kind of going to look at a couple of different aspects here. I want to shift gears a little away from just how many mags do we need for training and general self-defense purposes and look more like the real-world application. Like I said earlier, is there every time I think I'm going to use, you know, seven mags? Yeah, that's why I fucking keep them around. Does that mean everywhere I go I roll around with my carbine and seven mags? No, that's ridiculous. Of course I don't. But if I'm going to grab my carbine and I'm going to run out the door with it, so to speak, and real work needs to be done, I'm going to have seven fucking mags. Because if I don't, I'm going to be, in my opinion, undersupplied. Now, here's some considerations for how many mags you're thinking about taking to the streets with. First, let's talk about that context. Like Drew said, yeah, she stuffs them in her pocket. But if we take those same and we do that, we just stuff them in our pocket, and then we start trying to climb up to an OP, or we start trying to, you know, maneuver, or we start getting in and out of vehicles, or we start trying to, you know, low crawl through an air, you're going to fucking be losing magazines all over the place, right? Just be a goddamn tactical yard sale, and you're going to go to reach for a reload. It's not going to be there. So context is everything. Yeah, when we're at ranges and people are like, where do I put all these mags? I'm like, I don't fucking care. Put them in your pocket. Put them in your sock. Who gives a shit? It doesn't matter. You're just out here on the range. But when you are out in the real world, you have to be able to retain these. So that's even something to consider about how we carry them. Like I mentioned, I like the tacos. I like the tacos for quick access stuff. But on my primary carriers, everything has a bungee cord or a strap over it. You know, I don't like nothing but open top mag carriers. I'll have nothing but open top mag carriers like on my belt for just doing, you know, fast competition, training, shit like that. But oh my God, into the world, I'm throwing bungees or freaking flaps or whatever over that because as I'm getting out of vehicles, climbing through muddy terrain, you know, jumping out of shit, whatever, I want to make sure that stuff doesn't get snagged and pulled out. So other things to think about when you're thinking about how you're going to carry your mags. Now look at, can you carry these mags? Like just consider what's even your fitness level. Can you truly and realistically carry this plus all the other stuff that we're talking about? You know, everything else you might need, comms, med, you know, whatever else it is you think you need on your giant fixed blade fucking stabbing men in the chest knife or whatever. If you're going to put all that shit on your chest or your belt or whatever, can you carry that shit for an extended period of time? Do you possess the dexterity and flexibility and that equipment set up to get in and out of vehicles? I mean, people want us to teach like tactical gear classes. We want to show you how to set up your stuff. I'm like, dude, if I do that, literally, it's going to be a day of PT. You want to you're not going to like it. You're not going to like what I have to show you. Because how I learned it was from a bunch of old school, crusty fucking NCOs. And guess what? They knew what they were doing. They taught us how to train gear. And it was fucking phenomenal. And you train in it. And people be like, I like to train in my gear. And then go run around a flat square range. Look, I love you. And you're doing a great job. But that's fucking day one shit. Once you've done that, now you got to go do more. Just because you hung out in your plate carrier at a class on a flat square range for a day doesn't mean you've appropriately trained in your gear. That's a good start. It's a good place to check fit, to check comfort, to check your flexibility, to check your setup and make sure everything, you know, works well, that you're not getting hung up on your sling or whatever. Like, that's all a good place to check that. That's kind of where we, you know, flesh it out a little bit. But when it comes time to actually really start training with this thing, get your gear on and go hike a mountain. Not on a trail either. Go nasty climb the side of a fucking brush-busting mountain. Get out there when it's raining. Get out there when it's cold. Climb in and out of your vehicle. Low crawl across some terrain. You know, do these types of things. Do jumping jacks. Do some push-ups. Do some sit-ups. Like, do basic flexibility, mobility exercises. Do some calisthenics. Do some aerobics. It may sound silly, but yeah. Do some freaking yoga, man.
Yeah.
Get your gear on and see, how is this going to limit me now? And yeah, when I do my cool front forward ninja roll, it looks badass when people do it. But if you just yard sailed half your shit out of your open top pouches and then you get back up and your fucking pistol's laying over here and half your magazines are over here and your fucking snick snack bag came open and all your Sour Patch Kids are all over the floor, like, that's just not going to do. So you really got to get out and work it. It's also going to help you check your fitness gear. You have to consider also, like, in context, what are you looking to do? If you live in the mountains and you're about to go fucking Red Dawn some shit, okay, that's one thing. If you live in an urban environment and I need to be more clandestine about what I'm doing, then that's a whole other thing. I need to consider an entirely different type of way I'm going to carry my magazines if I'm going to need to be able to move relatively in the open through exposed areas where I'm going to be seen. You know, it's easy to think you can just throw all your shit on with your AOR1 or whatever and your Kryptek pants and you're just going to go run through the woods Red Dawning your shit. Yeah, fucking anybody can figure that loadout out.
Yeah.
But if you need to be a little more clandestine, a little more low pro, like I like the Fenris rig, for example, from Night Fighter. I think the Fenris rig is probably one of the coolest low pro rigs out there on the market today. And there's some other similar ones to it. You know, think about carrying in fanny packs, backpacks, you know, things like that. Things that I can maybe slip through an area a little bit more undetected. So that's gonna affect how and how much I'm gonna be able to carry. And that's gonna affect maybe potentially the type of engagements that I'm thinking about getting into. When I look at whether or not do I have a team? Do I have some kind of support? Because that's going to affect the type of, you know, weapons that I'm going to be carrying into an environment and how many mags I might want to carry into that environment. I'm more likely to get involved in a longer term engagement if I have multiple people with me, because then I can move and maneuver and actually utilize tactics and stuff. But if I'm just uno solo operator, I ain't getting in an extended gunfight with anybody. All they got to do is zig when I zag and I'm dead. I mean, there's too many variables there. If I have a team, now I might be looking at that, you know, 420 round, you know, 14 magazine freaking loadout situation. Maybe. Mm-hmm. But again, it depends on what the context is. So we go back to Ukraine, which is kind of what brought all this up. You know, what if those people would have been a little bit more prepared? I don't know. I don't want to get into politics or the tactics discussion of that, because I honestly don't know enough about it to speak intelligently enough about what happened in the early days. But I can tell you that in a situation like that, if you do not have a team of people, if you do not have multiple teams of people, even something to include maybe like a quick reaction force or a QRF to come potentially bail you out or cover you while you move and maneuver, you're not just going to pick up your gun and start repelling enemy forces. Even Red Dawn, they had a team, man. And not only did they have a team, but they also had a support network. They had an underground spy network. They had people in town that were feeding them and giving them supplies. And people forget all that shit. They forget, like, it's even in the fucking movie. And that's just a goddamn movie, but it's even in the movie. how much logistical support they had. Every time they pressed the trigger on that bullet, somebody had to provide that bullet to them. Somehow they got that equipment. They weren't just raiding it off the dead bodies of enemy combatants. They were also being supplied. They had a spy network. They had an intel network. You know, they had logistics. They had support. They were getting food. They had places to stay. Like, so much more to it than just running and gunning in the streets. So if I don't have a team and I don't have any kind of QRF, then I'm definitely not going to find myself in extended gunfights, and thus my 7 mags is designed to get me out of a place, get me out of a situation, and still have ammo left over.
Yeah.
It's like anyone who, in the sound of my voice, who has ever done a true break contact exercise. Yeah, goodbye 7 mags. I mean, the first time Drew was training with me years and years and years ago. I don't know if we were even dating yet. And we were doing some AK work. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to show you some cool shit. It's going to be fun, because we had access to this range that allowed us to kind of do more of this. And I'm like, all we're going to try to do is get around this geographical feature, okay? So we're just going to break contact from this one target who's not even going to move or maneuver or anything. And basically the gunfire is never going to stop, all right? So if I'm not shooting, you're shooting. And if you're not shooting, you better be fucking moving, getting into a position where you can start shooting again, because I don't want to run out of ammo. Because if one of us runs out of ammo before the other one gets in position, the shooting stops, and that's when we get fucked, all right? So we're just going to keep gunfire up and up and up and up. And I mean, I think by the end of it, Drew had gone through, you know, 4 or 5 mags. I'd gone through 4 or 5 mags, and she was just like, holy shit. And I'm like, yeah, and that was one enemy combatant who doesn't move, who's not real, who doesn't shoot back, just a steel target over there in the bushes, and we just had to move over this very close geographical feature that was like 50 yards behind us.
Yep.
It wasn't even that difficult of a thing, and just to maintain a constant stream of fire, we blasted through freaking ammo.
Mm-hmm.
So if I don't have any resupply, you know, that's what else we're thinking about. If I don't have a resupply, if I don't have a place now, okay, cool, we got back to our little spot or whatever. Well, if we don't have more ammo there, we potentially just fucking shot everything. Those of you guys might remember when we had Neil on the show years ago talking about working with the Peshmerga in Iraq, fighting up against ISIS. And he was like, he kind of went over there as a support function and ended up in the field some a little bit. And he was, you know, he's former 4th ID guy from the Army. And so he's used to very conventional, you know, logistical and support trains behind you. And he's like, man, the first time we were about to get into a fight, he's like, I looked down and I had like, if I remember correctly, he's like, I had like 3 mags for my AK. And it was it, man. Like, there wasn't more ammo somewhere else.
Yeah.
Like, if we didn't get some kind of resupply from some magical underground network or whatever, we're fucked. And he's like, I stopped thinking old school, you know, U.S. Army way of, yeah, let's get in this fucking fight. He's like, I started thinking about, hey, we should get the fuck out of here.
Yeah,
remember
that.
We don't have any air support. We don't have any fucking artillery. There's no QRF. I have 3 fucking magazines. I'm not even really supposed to be out here with you guys, you know? And that really, because he was able to experience both sides of the coin, we could say conventional fighting and, you know, guerrilla fighting. I mean, I can only imagine, like, I would be looking at that situation and just be like, fuck, you know what I mean? We don't have that. There's no help. Mm-hmm. And half my team doesn't even speak my language.
Mm-hmm.
Shit, you know? And our medic is a medic because he took a crash course online TCCC class. You know what I mean? So like, there's a lot going on logistically here other than just how many mags can I carry. And so this, again, this goes back to, what are we trying to accomplish? What are you trying to accomplish with these magazines? If you're thinking endless, sustained gunfight, you're going to need 100 magazines.
Yeah.
You need a pallet of fucking magazines. If you're thinking hit and run guerrilla tactics, again, I think 7 magazines is the appropriate answer. It's a standard loadout. Would I do that with less? Yes. You look at special operations units, especially some of the guys that we work with, and, you know, they've got a number of real-world experiences going and doing hits, you know, direct action hits on a high-value target. And it's basically like a snatch-and-grab kind of situation where they were like, yeah, dude, we went in, like, no armor, 3 fucking magazines. Like, land on the hood, come down the stairs, grab up every – or land on the hood, I mean, land on the roof, you know, come down the stairs, snatch who we need, shoot everybody we don't need, get the fuck out of there. Like, we're going to be on target for 10 minutes or less. You know what I mean? Like, we're going to get in there. We're going to get it done. We're going to get the fuck out of here. Like, if we start running out of ammo, we just leave. Get the fuck out. Abort mission, you know? So it's just like a totally different way of thinking. And That's a very, very specific thing. They need to be light. They need to be fast. They need to be, you know, small. They need to just get in there, hit it, and get out of there. It's a very different situation, and very, very, very few people are ever going to need to do that kind of stuff. And so the last thing you want to look at in asking this question is, what else might I be called upon to do? Like, will I be called upon to do suppressive fire? Well, in my opinion, if you don't have mortars and belt feds, you are not doing fucking suppressive fire. All right, that's a baseline minimum, in my opinion. That's the baseline minimum we need for true suppressive fire. Suppressing an area with a magazine-fed weapon is incredibly difficult just because of the reloads. Mm-hmm. It can be done with appropriate team and the appropriate tactics and training, but it's not very easy. Right? Belt feds are able to keep up sustained fire for obvious reasons. They're fed by a belt, and mortars, of course, drop shit out of the fucking sky, and they're easy to adjust and they're quick to put in place. I can have a mortar team working and walking with me, though most people aren't going to have access to that. So if you're called upon to do suppressive fire, you need to start pre-planning that shit now, because now we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of rounds that you're going to need to want to carry. You know, a 420 of that, or 420, you know, full combat, that's bare minimum. I'd be carrying, you know, 500 to 1,000 rounds of belt-fed minimum for a situation where I might have to be, you know, heavily called upon to suppress an area. Because that's a high rate of fire. And yeah, you know, good belt-fed tactics are not just holding down the trigger and burning out the barrel. We know that. But even then, a 100-round belt, 250-round belt goes pretty fast when you are shooting under those kind of circumstances. So, you know, they are – if you're thinking that that's what you're going to need to do, then you need to start looking at other options. You better start buying a bunch of drum magazines for your ARs. You may have, you know, start buying those types of things and figuring out effective ways to carry them and get them into place, because even 60 rounds is going to go pretty damn fast.
Yeah.
And the 60-round Magpul drums would be the only ones I would really recommend. So, look, we could really start getting into tactics here and start talking about capabilities and whatnot, but I just want you guys to be thinking about it from this perspective. Buy more magazines. Buy them when they're available. Buy them, they're relatively inexpensive again. Buy them when they're inexpensive. Buy them when they're available. You don't know when another ban is coming. You don't know when they might be a good item to have to either sell or trade. And I have enough magazines that I could never buy another magazine for any gun that needs magazines that I own. I could never buy another one, and I have enough for the rest of my life. And I'm perfectly happy with that. I never want to have to be like, oh shit, I got to go buy another magazine, and there's a ban, or there's a shortage, or there's a problem, and now I can't get it, or yada, yada, yada. And yeah, if shit does kick off, have your appropriate loadout, you know, ready to go. But there you go. don't be that guy. It was brought up in one of the emails that was sent to me that he said – I'll just read it to you guys because it's funny. Could make an interesting podcast topic where you get to rant against internet folks, and no shit, there I was, GWAT vets who carry 13 magazines on their kit because that one time they were pinned down 15 years ago. And look, those are valid experiences, but contextualize them.
Yeah.
Is this realistic for you to experience or not? Are you likely to get, quote unquote, pinned down again in this environment? Fucking probably not. You know, without the use of so many other tactics and techniques that we have to discuss here. So wrapping it up, 5 magazines for pistol bare minimum with 5 extra brand new magazines in the package. 10 magazines for carbines minimum with 10 brand new magazines in the package. Bolt feds for hunting, 2 magazines minimum, another 2 magazines brand new in the package. More operational type bolt guns, 10 magazines minimum, 10 magazines brand new in the package. If you had that, you would have plenty of magazines more than likely for a very, very long time. So now, I will say this last bit because it just popped in my head. For all you people who are constantly trained to throw your magazines on the ground every time you want to reload, you can be real fucking disappointed in the real world. I know cool guy XYZ fucking told you, you got to get rid of it because in a gunfight you're going to die. Okay, I get it. But if you are in the habit of constantly throwing your magazines on the ground and never retaining them, or you're in the habit of not having good ammunition management and you practice going to slide lock or bolt lock a lot because you think that super fast cool reloads is the only way to do it, you're already fucking up if you're not practicing ammunition management on the range. And even more so, if you're in the habit of throwing all your fucking empty magazines on the ground, well, guess what's going to happen in the real world? How many magazines are you going to need? Like 5,000. Because every time you get in a fucking fight, you're going to leave half of them behind. So keep that in mind as well when you're considering all of this. If you think I missed something or you wildly disagree with me or whatever, email us, info@trainingaz.com. We'd love to hear from you. Independence training moment for this week. What did Glenn and Drew do this past week to prepare any of the four zones for an emergency? We actually met with some of our team, our training team, to talk about expanding the company and also at the same time shrinking some of our personal circles. So, you know, bringing people in a little bit tighter, bringing them a little bit closer, and then expanding the company itself. So we're talking about kind of a mix of zone two and three here. Independence Training Moment brought to you by Independence Training. Find us at trainingaz.com. Remember, you can bring us out to train with you. Get hosting information via email, info@trainingaz.com. Pretty easy to bring us out to your area. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram as The Arms Room Show, Independence Training, Red Wire Gear, MRC Phoenix, and PMA or Premier Martial Arts Scottsdale. We are proud members of the Heroes Media Group. Be sure to check out the other awesome services and products that they have. Next week, I don't know if there's going to be rants.
Isn't the show supposed to be Glenn's rant?
I don't know what it is. We're going to be talking about guns kill kids and other silly gun control arguments.
There's going to be tons of rants.
It's possible. That might be a drinking show. I don't know. Anyways. All right, you guys. Till next time. Stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.